Yati Ravana Shadi Jamunati Ravana Shadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa. Srimad is Divine Grace, Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Siddha Prabhupada Keed. Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Keed. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Keed. Samvira Bhakta Vrinda Keed. Jainatai Gorpemanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. So while it looks like this is a normal morning Bhagavatam class setup, we're going to do something very different today and tomorrow. And it's a little spontaneous, like how we're going to do it. But it goes something like this. It's going to be a shared discussion where over the next 2 days, today and tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, there's a group of devotees, some local, some from distant places, who will be spending time together strengthening our relationships with one another, those who are doing the service of mentoring. Just a little ISKCON news soundbite. We just recently had a North American Temple Presidents and GBC meeting in Houston, Texas. And one of the topics that we discussed during the GBC Executive Committee group portion of our meeting was the desire to move in the direction of having a North American, that's U.S. and Canada, a North American congregation development ministry. We're growing, and rather than just growing randomly and however it happens, a plan for how to grow in a little organized manner, not constraining, but you know, with some plan and some direction and some standards and some things like that. Wholesome things, not the other. And to move in that direction, I contacted Kripamoya Prabhu. Some of you may know his name. Some of you may even know him. Prabhupada disciple in the London Bhaktivedanta Manor, Soho Street, ISKCON, London, UK, Yatra. And he's a fantastic Vaishnava. Many of you here, because Vaisheshika Prabhu came, when I say, he's such an amazing devotee, right? So Kripamoya is similar caliber of just an amazing devotee. And his whole life, well, his major part of his life has been taking care of the congregation in London and the UK. And so I requested him to assist us as we go down the path of creating such a ministry for the United States, and you know, partner with him. He can be our consultant and help us do things, you know, avoiding, minimizing the same mistakes they learned out of the decades of work that they've been doing with their congregation. And his answer was fantastic, and my response was fantastic. So one of the things that he shared, like a major part of what he shared, it was like an hour plus conversation, was they have over their, let's say, last 30 years, has evolved a system of mentorship. And they have, you know, it's British, so they have standards and policies and, you know, unique things that maybe is a little confining for the American population that wants freedom and democracy and do your own thing. So we may have something in between the British, you know, stiff upper lip and, you know, the American shoot from the hip. Somewhere in between. Nice. So this is a group of devotees who will be spending time on mentorship, mentoring, and we're going to do different things. And one of the ideas that has evolved over the past few times we've gathered together is, I'll gesture in the direction of Jai Jagannath, but also in the direction of Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam, all of whom speak about relationships are strengthened by hearing and chanting and discussing topics of Krishna Katha together. It's wonderful. It's just magical. It's transcendental. It's fun. It works. So that's part of the plan. From the last time that we met, three personalities, Jai Jagannath, Jai Subhadra, and Prema Tarangini, were to come up with a theme for us to discuss during our morning class. And here's the theme. I'm going to read. Vaishnava Ninda versus the glories of a devotee. Quote, there would be plenty of resources for devotees to draw from to easily fill both days, Thursday, Friday, of nectar of instruction, text 6. We are warned not to see a devotee from the external point of view. The natures, swabhava janatayar, and their bodies, vapu, unfortunately, due to attachment to the body, the desire to see with one's materially contaminated eyes is so strong that often one becomes implicated in Vaishnava Ninda, even in the name of truthfulness. I just have to speak the truth, Prabhu. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just being truthful. So, the tone is a little exaggerated, but it's how do we exercise truthfulness at the same time avoid Vaishnava Ninda? For example, sometimes pure conversations can be too much centered on criticism of other devotees in the name of sharing their heart, or sometimes never share anything from the heart, even though there is stuff to share, with a feeling that it may be an offense. How to have a balance where one shares one's heart fully in the mood of desiring support or a deeper understanding or inquiry. Relationships and having proper kind of relationships, strengthening relationships, and while entering into that very wonderful arena of truthfulness, how to not end up in the soup of Vaishnava Ninda. Seeing the glories of the devotees, same time being, you know, grounded in reality and seeing where there's something that through the process of bhakti and association and so forth, that one can leave behind and come to another level of Krishna consciousness, how to do that nicely. That's the theme. So what we did in Gita Nagari, I don't know how we're going to do it logistically here. I'm tossing the ball to Nityananda Pran. So what we did is we sat in a circle, and so it wasn't, you know, us, you know, one person and then the audience. We were just sharing, because in Gita Nagari, there's four walls in Radha Damodar and pretty much otherwise empty. So we had the place to ourselves. And then others kind of sat around. So it's a little different here. I'm not sure how it's going to work. I'll speak something, and then a little discussion, and someone will speak something, and then a little discussion, and someone will speak something, and time's up. And then tomorrow we'll do the same thing. Got the picture? Okay, so a little difficulty added is that guy over there, the camera, and how to logistically work it out. So you'll be ready to say how we're going to do it, because I'm going to think about what I'm going to speak about. So I thought of two sections from the same chapter of Madhya Leela Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 15. And one of the sections is Vasudev Datta, and another section is Amogha, the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Who is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prahlad? Who is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? Yeah, he's the, not a pujari. He's the pundit, scholar. He's the chief scholar of the king, Prataparudra. And he was up there. He was a grihastha, but he had as students thousands of sannyasis, because he was super scholar, and under him they were studying nice juicy topics like Vedanta Sutra and chanting Om and, you know, those kinds of things. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's wife was Sachi, and they had a daughter. They don't even give her name. They just say the daughter of Sachi. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya left the position of being a mundane, wrangling scholar of the Vedas and became a very elevated devotee. And in his devotion for Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to serve him. And one of the ways he wanted to serve him was preparing lunch. In fact, he wanted more than his share of lunches in every month. He wanted, you know, like lion's share of many extra, like once in a month, but more. So he made an attachment to his house that had only one entrance to the kitchen. So then there was another entrance that was supposed to be locked where Lord Chaitanya could come and wouldn't be disturbed, and Sachi could prepare the prasad and just offer to Lord Chaitanya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya could run back and forth and bring him the items for him for his lunch. So one of those times when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was back and forth bringing items, Amogha came to the door in an envious mood and opened the door and, "Aha! He's eating so much. What kind of renunciation is this?" etc. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya heard his voice and he came running with a stick in his hand, ready to beat his son-in-law, and his son-in-law ran faster because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was older, and he was so unhappy. He cursed that he should die and my daughter is now a widow. because he's not part of our family anymore. And he was so angry. And due to the reaction of offending Lord Chaitanya, he contracted a very, very serious disease. In Bengali, the name of the disease is Vishuchika, which is cholera. He's Bengali, he knows. Is that a Bengali word? You don't know the meaning. Vishuchika. Never heard it? Okay. So I'm going to read a few verses and a purport. That's our program. And at least the relevant part of the purport, because it's a long purport. So Gopinath Acharya is the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So Gopinath Acharya informed Lord Chaitanya, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife are fasting till death, and their son-in-law is dying of cholera. News sometimes isn't good news. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that Amoga was going to die, he immediately ran to him in great haste. Placing his hand on Amoga's chest, he spoke as follows. Quote, "The heart of a Brahmana is by nature very clean. Therefore, it is a proper place for Krishna to sit. Why have you allowed jealousy to sit here also? Because of this, you have become a chandala, the lowest of men, and you have also contaminated a most purified place, your heart. However, due to the association of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, all your contamination is now vanquished. When a person's heart is cleansed of all contamination, he is able to chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna. Therefore, Amoga, get up and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If you do so, Krishna will unfailingly bestow mercy upon you." And there's a long purport, but I'll read just part of it. A Brahmana may be a very learned scholar, but this does not mean that he is free from material contamination. Notice the difference. Scholarship and free from contamination are not the same. A Brahmana's contamination, however, is in the mode of goodness. In the material world, the three modes are goodness, passion, and ignorance. And all of these are simply different gradations of contamination. Unless a Brahmana transcends such contamination and approaches the platform of unalloyed devotional service, he cannot be accepted as a Vaishnava. An impersonalist may be aware of the impersonal Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth, but his activities are on the impersonal platform. Sometimes he imagines a form of the Lord, parentheses, saguna, upasana. But such an attempt is never successful in helping one attain complete realization. The impersonalist may consider himself a Brahmana and may be situated in the mode of goodness, but nonetheless, he is conditioned by one of the modes of material nature. This means that he is not yet liberated, for liberation cannot be attained unless one is completely free from the modes. In any case, the Mayavad philosophy keeps one conditioned. If one becomes a Vaishnava through proper initiation, he automatically becomes a Brahmana. Therefore, there is no doubt about it. The Garuda Purana confirms. There's a verse from the Garuda Purana. Brahmananam sahasrebhya, etc. Out of many thousands of brahmanas, one may become qualified to perform yajna. Out of many thousands of such qualified brahmanas, one may be fully aware of the Vedanta philosophy. Out of millions of learned Vedanta scholars, there may be one Vishnu Bhakta, or devotee of Lord Vishnu. It is he who is most exalted. Pretty nice, huh? Garuda Purana. Paragraph. Unless one is a fully qualified brahmana, he cannot advance in the spiritual science. A real brahmana is never envious of Vaishnavas. He is considered an imperfect neophyte. Imperfect neophyte. Impersonalist brahmanas are always opposed to Vaishnava principles. They are envious of Vaishnavas because they do not know the goal of life. Nate vidu svartakatim hi Vishnum. However, when a brahmana becomes a Vaishnava, there is no duality. If a brahmana does not become a Vaishnava, he certainly falls down from the brahmana platform. This is confirmed by Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.3. Na bhajanti avajanati sthanad brashta patyantyadha. Na bhajanti avajanati sthanad brashta patyantyadha. So that's the reading. And to allow for others to speak, I'll just speak little points and not expand them so much. Lord Chaitanya is demonstrating exactly what our topic is. The glories of devotional service, the glories of a devotee, in this case Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, by the association of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Lord Chaitanya is saying that Amoga, you're freed from contamination. Actually, it's Lord Chaitanya's association that freed his heart from contamination. But that's the humility of a Vaishnav. They give credit to another Vaishnav. And it's not false. It's factual. Because of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's, later Lord Chaitanya says, after he cures him, Amoga stands up and starts dancing like a madman. And for the rest of his life, he's known as Amoga Thakur. It's like Jagai Madhai becoming, you know, great devotees. But very humble, because they know what's that direction is lots of contamination. But through the association of Amoga, just by family relation, being the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his mercy to Amoga. So if you have some relatives that are in Maya, just become a pure devotee. Get the favor of Lord Chaitanya, and nice things will start to happen. Not just, you know, your immediate family, but cousins and in-laws and all those kinds of people. Become a pure devotee. And that way, Lord Chaitanya will show mercy upon them, even if they're offensive and, you know, a little cuckoo. So if because of Lord Chaitanya's not... It's not false. It's because of his association, familial association, with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that now his heart is freed from contamination. Then another nice lesson is the heart of a brahmana, or one who is trying in the mode of goodness, or trying to become situated in the mode of goodness, or a practicing devotee, a neophyte devotee. We want to make the heart pure so that it's a fit place for the Supreme Lord to sit or be present. And the mode of goodness contamination is another contamination. because with the motive goodness comes a kind of pride that says, I'm better than you are. I have more knowledge than you have. I have a higher motive nature than you have, etc. A kind of pride, a motive goodness pride. And that's a contamination. Its motive goodness is better than passion, ignorance, but pride of any variety is a contamination. And Amoga, Lord Chaitanya's teaching, is the heart of a Brahmana is a place that's pure because the Lord resides there. Why have you allowed something else to reside there, this contamination? Give it up. This is a very nice example of course, this is Lord Chaitanya. We're not Lord Chaitanya. But the example is being the well-wisher of another who may have some less than perfect, in this case, like, you know, really off contamination. But Lord Chaitanya is speaking as a well-wisher because he's a well-wisher. Now, there are other circumstances where Lord Chaitanya got out a hammer and let the person have the hammer. So it's not, it's only one thing is appropriate, but in this case, he's showing the fullness of his mercy. He removed from Amoga's heart that contamination from his well-wishing upon Amoga, just his compassion. Now that would be really wonderful if, yes, like Lord Chaitanya came and touched our heart and all that contamination is gone. Like if he's going to do it with Amoga, what about any one of us? Come on, it's only fair. But he was related to one who is a pure devotee. That's the something very special. And if we don't have, you know, a father-in-law or whatever, some immediate relative that's a pure devotee, even the sons of Advaita Acharya, not all of them became pure devotees, although their father was a pure devotee. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not all of his sons became Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur on that level. So that's not the only criterion, that you just have a relative that's a pure devotee. So supposing some of you become pure devotees, the opportunity of coming to the stage of devotional service, the opportunity of becoming liberated through the medium of devotional service is immediately extended by the personality of Godhead. We don't have to lift a pinky. It's his mercy upon one who is the object of your family relationship or your kindness. So be kind. The message isn't have lots of children so that you can have many relatives and they'll become devotees because you're a pure devotee. Isn't that the message? Become a pure devotee is the message. And wishing well upon others while recognizing their shortcoming, their less than perfect condition. Wish well upon them. And depending upon the circumstance, different ways of expressing wishing well upon them. Hammers sometimes work. Soft as a rose sometimes works. You can have a variety of tools in your toolkit, and you may select different ones at different times according to what's appropriate. But be a well-wisher while at the same time recognizing something that needs to be improved. Two other things, and I'm done. In Anuttama Prabhu, he's our ISKCON communications minister, global. And one of the things he does is he conducts seminars, not just on communications, but all kinds of things. So one of those seminars is leadership and management. sounds really dry. But it's, you know, how to be a good leader is relevant to this. When you're a leader, or like you're a Vaishnav, because in the world, Vaishnavas are Shrestha, and others are Tatat Evetaro Jana. They're, to, in an ideal sense, to follow the example of the Shrestha, the best, just as this Garuda Purana verse is saying. So you're all leaders. Don't like cringe and go, oh, I'm bad. I'm fallen. We're to be at least. The opportunity is there. You're now duly anointed as leaders. At least the potential is there. The opportunity is there to be leaders, setting an example for others. And in setting an example for others, of course, there's many things that go under setting an example, but what Anuttama's, the piece that's in his course, is sometimes you have to, as a position of a leader, Vaishnava, give encouragement to someone to go another step beyond their shortcoming. So what he teaches... Now again, there may be other methods, but a good one is appreciation, room for improvement, appreciation. And what Lord Chaitanya is doing here is Amoga, you're a Brahmana. Amoga, the heart of a Brahmana is pure. It's a place for the sitting place of the Supreme Lord. There's some room for improvement here, Amoga. You've allowed some contamination, jealousy, envy. Of course, the object of that envy was Lord Chaitanya, but you've allowed some, and now it's polluted the whole thing. Your heart is all messed up. And then here, appreciation, but you're the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and by his mercy, your heart has become free from contamination. And it will be possible if you chant Hare Krishna. So, Amoga, stand. He's cholera, like wiped out, finished, nearly dead. Stand and chant and dance. Miracle. He stood and chant and danced. Because he was a fit recipient, and certainly Lord Chaitanya was powerful unlike any of us. I mean, there's no comparison. So, but it's a nice standard. And depending upon the situation, that's a nice way to approach in a leader's position how to help another make progress. You know, there's different ways of doing the same thing. When someone becomes like calcified, that's not going to work. You need a hammer. You need a thunderbolt. You need, you know, and that may not work also. But if it's one of those, it's still behind it is a well-wishing motive. And I've gone way beyond. I wanted to say something about, maybe someone else will say something about Lord Chaitanya's discussion with Vasudeva Datta. It's like a very, very, it's like a reverse, role reversal from this one. So, any comments quickly? Comments, questions? And otherwise, Nityananda Pran will tell us how we're going to do the next one. Speaker. Okay, who's our next speaker? And how are we going to do this?
Maharaj, it seems...
Jai Jagannath volunteered. Okay, good.
I did, yes. I volunteered him. I think there is a little apprehension in sitting there in the spotlight. So... is it all right if the speakers speak from where they're sitting?
Sure. And the camera can move to where the speaker is.
Turn to where they're
then we turn to face the speaker. Because he's going to say more than 3 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay.
Somebody else should be ready as soon as next in line, whoever that is.
Because I'm conditioned with an American body, I'm going to shoot from the hip a little bit. But I have thought about this topic, of course, a lot.
I'm sure you have.
The verse I was going to choose to discuss is from Bhagavad Gita.
Can we turn the speaker a different direction?
The Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 30.
Okay.
Primarily. Apichat sudaracharo vajate mamananya bak. Sadur eva samantavya samyag vyavasito hi saha. So the glory of a devotee is mostly determined by his ananya bak, more so than what may be easily traceable in terms of external appearances. The conditioned souls, due to being fixed in the bodily concept of life, there's generally the tendency to give more emphasis to externals because it's easily perceivable. And so we tend to value that more than the things that we cannot see, thus atheism. The conditioned soul is termed as Bahir Mukh by Mahaprabhu. It means outward facing. So he gives a lot of importance to externals, and therefore it's illusioned. And because of illusion, he makes mistakes, like committing an aparad on account of a mistaken understanding of a person's position. But from this verse of Bhagavad Gita, we understand that the thing that Krishna really appreciates in the soul is his ananya bhak. So much so that even if externally it may be seen that he's doing something very, very abominable. Sudarachar means very abominable, not even ordinarily, but very abominable. But because Krishna appreciates the ananya bhak, the fixed determination to serve him, to achieve his lotus feet, so much that Krishna gives that lesser importance, the sudarachar aspect, and gives all importance to his ananya bhak, his fixed determination to please him. Some examples are very nice, like one example given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the gopis of Vrindavan. Their externally, their activities are very bewildering. At least when I first read Krishna book, the rasa, the pastime, was a little bewildered for sure. You know, you hear about the gopis were feeding their kids, and when Krishna plays his flute, put the kid down and left. I don't think that would be very much appreciated in the modern society. You hear about they were cooking for their husbands and et cetera. So they abandoned all their duties to serve Krishna. Socially, of course, in American culture, that's not so far out. But in Vedic culture, that's extremely far out, an extreme transgression of religious principles, sudarachar. But even though that is the case, because of their ananya bhak to please Krishna, then they are easily absolved from such apparent or factually sinful activities, and they become quickly righteous, shripram bhavati dharmatma. Another example might be Vritrasura. Vritrasura had a demon body. He was killing demigods also. But his internal situation was still fixed on Krishna, Sankarshan. I don't know if I'm to move. Should I move somewhere else? Okay. There are many examples.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
Okay. So there are several examples. Dhruva Maharaj may be another example that's sometimes cited in this regard, killing so many hundreds of yakshas, a sudarachar type of thing, but fixed on Krishna. So that is the more important feature of a devotee's pure devotion to Krishna, you can say, than what may be easily perceived with our material eyes. So the dilemma... So that is the glory of a devotee. So sometimes, being materialistic, we may tend to think that our glory comes in some type of achievement of a position within the community of devotees, the society of devotees, or within the institution. Or, I learned so many shlokas, therefore I'm a great devotee. I remember, you know, once I learned the Hino Smim verse and a couple of other verses after that, I'm great. I'm not acharya material, maybe not yet, at least give it a couple more years, like that. Yeah, easily deluded by a little bit of achievement and some externals. Even something like cleaning the bathroom, although we often hear that to help humility, sometimes you feel proud to clean the bathroom. Oh, I've done such a humble service. And then all the better if someone walks in and sees me do the humble service. Oh, now they will know of my humility. And then we take that to be our glory, you know, unfortunately. But Krishna's consideration is the Ananya Bhak feature. How much are we actually determined to achieve his lotus feet? So so even if the devotee does something very abominable, if he is Ananya Bhak, he worships Krishna with fixed determination, then he should be considered a sadhu. Now the dilemma with the conditioned souls who have tendency for committing offense is that we can't see the Ananya Bhak of anyone. We can't see what's going on internally. So although it may be seen that a devotee does something crazy, for example, another example is Bharat Maharaj getting attached to the deer. And when you read the fifth canto, it's kind of weird. It wasn't like he just got attached to a deer like someone else gets attached to their dog, but the way he was interacting with the deer was quite bewildering. Like if you shall read that section, it's kind of like, whoa. And he was on the platform of Bhav Bhakti. And anyway, on account of that, he got a dear body in the next life. So it'd be so easy for those who are externally orientated to say, just see, he's not a great devotee after all, even though he was on such an exalted position. And the reason that we have tendency to do that is because we don't have the ability to perceive the Ananya Bhak, the internal situation of that devotee. And therefore, being outward-facing, the tendency is to give, oh, see, the activity, and then find fault. And that way, we get destroyed. Because Krishna has many ways of bringing his devotees back home, back to Godhead. So we were discussing this, that Krishna says in the Gita, chapter 6, for those who are unsuccessful after a short term of practice of yoga, they can go to the heavenly regions and enjoy, and after they enjoy, they can come to the earth planet either as in a Brahmin family or in a family of mercantilists. And if they're successful after a long time of practice, they can take birth in the family of transcendentalists like acharyas. Srila Prabhupada points out in the first canto, fifth chapter, verse number 19, and if Krishna is really merciful, he'll chastise a devotee in that life itself, and that way bring him home back home to Godhead immediately. So then sometimes Krishna may be making a special arrangement for a devotee, and therefore he does something that's sudarachar in order to involve his Krishna consciousness. And then that devotee is on his way back home, back to Godhead. And now for those who shall observe that, not understanding how Krishna is making arrangements for the devotee, our tendency is to only see the external and then start finding fault, and that way become implicated in aparad. So this verse is very interesting, this Apicca Sudaracha row verse. I just wanted to read this little section, then I'm finished. This comes in the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. It's a little description of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And apparently, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to tell this anecdote to his disciples regularly. So I'll just read that. It's very nice discussion on this point. So I'll just read it. While absorbed in a dreamlike state, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur happened to enter the court of Yamaraj, where an assembly had been convened to discuss a question concerning two verses from Bhagavad Gita. This is really far out. So, Api Chesu Daracharo, Bhajate Mama Nanyabak, Sadhu Reva Samantavya, Samyak Vyavasito Hisaha, Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma, Shashat Chantim Nigachati, Konteya Pratija Nihi, Name Bhakta Pranashati. Even if one, this is a translation, even if one is most abominably behaved, if he is undeviatingly engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered a sadhu because he is properly situated in his determination. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare that my devotee never perishes. That's in the end of the unquote. Yamaraj, one of the 12 Mahajans and the Lord of Justice, who thus was exacting in discerning moral principles, Brahma, Shiva, and Narada, who are principal demigods and also are among the 12 Mahajans, and many other exalted persons were present, but none could resolve the doubt quote, to assert that by performing exclusive bhajan, a person will attain dharma and peace suggests that those states are lacking in bhakti, and that unalloyed bhakti, the ultimate pinnacle of dharma, is but a means for achieving such ends. So this is a common doubt, even amongst the Mahajans, it looks like. It's certainly amongst us. So then, this is the last paragraph. Seeing Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur arrive there, all the demigods rose from their seats as a gesture of respect and then presented their query to him. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur settled the issue by explaining that in this context, saha, he, in the first verse, samyag vyavasato, he, saha, so in this context, saha, he, refers not to the sadhu, but to one who, not being bewildered by the apparently abominable acts of a surrendered devotee, still considers that devotee to be a sadhu. Isn't that amazing? He who so considers quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. Moreover, by not attempting to impose standards of worldly morality on a sadhu, he himself soon becomes a sadhu. Not he, the devotee who does the apparently abominable act, but he who's observing that and comes to this conclusion. Upon hearing this conclusive elucidation, the demigods offered obeisances to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, I read this about 6 months ago or so, and I was really stunned when I read it. I never forgot it. So this is maybe it can be sent out, and you can read it over and over again to get momentum in the mentality. We should actually be developing to avoid, not only to avoid our tendency to commit offense on account of our bodily identification, but also to ourselves become saintly by having the proper vision of saintly persons. We need momentum in that, because the general tendency of conditioned life is to go the other way towards the external appearances, which can be very misleading. So the glory of a devotee is his ananya bhak, and the glory of those who shall observe devotees means that we should observe them according to guru, sadhu, and shastra, and try to look beyond the appearances. I think something that Velo Prabhu told me that you mentioned, Maharaj, when the phraseology really helped, works for me at least. When there is some type of bewildering situation, the tendency is reaction. And Avila Prabhu told me that you said, first hit the pause button. And I really appreciate that, because I used to watch a lot of television, so I can really relate. You know, first hit the pause button, and then let us go into a deeper state of inquiry before we just jump to conclusions. Hit the pause button and take shelter of pastimes like this, so that we may be able to gain a deeper internal insight and protect us from being destroyed on account of our being misled by appearances. So I shot from the hip a little. I wasn't totally organized, but that's going to be my little thing. Oh.
Could you read again and then paraphrase in your own words? Don't go there yet. Pay attention. The dilemma was, you said it's a common dilemma, everyone says, but you read it in such a way I didn't catch it.
Okay.
So read it again and then say in your own words what that dilemma is.
Yes.
Second question is this something that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, that he was in meditative state and this happened, that happened? So he disclosed this to his son Bhakti Siddhanta, who then repeated it many times. And then the third is, can you go one step further, because our topic is what you addressed is how to regard and how to not externals, but to Guru Sadhu Shastra, the real situation of someone, you know, internally, you know, according to Guru Sadhu Shastra, because how do we know what's going on? There are symptoms by which we can know something. But you know, the deeper something is not discernible because we're gross. We have a tendency to see in gross terms because it's easier. So you address that nicely. One more step is then, can you embellish with an example or two how this might play out in life? Like, you know, a hypothetical scenario or two of we're moving along in devotional service and we see something external and, you know, the pause button, and then where do you go from there? Because the theme here is how do you interact with peers? So, you know, let's say you're having a discussion with Nityananda Pran, or you're having a discussion with Gokulananda about something. How might you address that someone, or speak with another about that someone, you know, in practical terms, applying this with some hypothetical example A or B, or, you know, a few of them.
Okay. Okay. I'll read the italicized statement before the pastime that answers the second question. That Srila Bhaktivinoda's devotional status surpassed even that of the topmost demigods, and that he was thus revered by them, was borne out by the following anecdote often told to his disciples by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who had heard it from Srila Krishna Das Babaji. So that was, so then, that, yeah, Krishna Das Babaji, yes. So the first question is they were having the Mahajans, the demigods were having the doubt to assert that by performing exclusive bhajan a person will attain dharma and peace, suggest that those states are lacking in bhakti, and that unalloyed bhakti, the ultimate pinnacle of dharma, is but a means for achieving such ends. Okay, so the doubt here of the Mahajans is that if bhakti is used to attain dharma and peace, then dharma and peace must be without bhakti. And then bhakti is just being used as a vehicle to attain a means to an end, and the end being dharma and peace. But their confusion is that actually the pinnacle of dharma is bhakti, and that the unalloyed bhakti, the ultimate pinnacle of dharma. So this was their confusion here.
How does Bhaktivinoda Thakur's answer address that question?
I didn't deeply meditate on it, but my initial understanding is that because the person who is observing, may not actually be situated on such a pure platform, but by observing properly, he comes to such a pure platform. So then the confusion of the Mahajans, demigods, is they were confused that the verse was actually referring to the pure devotee himself. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that it's actually not referring to the pure devotee,
yeah,
but rather.
His explanation is clear. Addressing the question. The question is, being a nirjan bhajan in the solitude to attain peace, whatever the other
thing is. Dharma.
Seeing how
So that's the third question, right? That was part of the third question, right? Okay. Yeah. This is actually just a point of clarification, that the he who's observing, he becomes situated in Dharma in peace by seeing the exclusive devotee. That's what I was understanding. I was just trying to clarify that.
The peace and Dharma is a subset, but he attains devotional service by seeing properly and acting properly. It's part of the package. It's not an attainment. The attainment is devotional service, of which peace and Dharma is a subset. Like Sarvadharmam Pradija Mamekam, because he's surrendered. He can see like Krishna sees because he's surrendered to Krishna. So he can see the Ananya Bhak aspect of the sadhu that's done a boo-boo, that did some sudurachar. They see the Ananya Bhak. That's attaining, the opposite. They attain bhakti thereby, and the other is a subset. The attainment is devotional service. The attainment is that being able to see it on the platform of devotional service, they become then peaceful.
Okay, yeah, I would have to discuss it
okay,
more.
Okay, well, yeah.
But as far as an example is concerned, the exact specifics are not coming to mind, but an ideal may be a devotee who we were serving with suddenly leaves devotional service on account of doing a boo-boo, as you're putting it. And the tendency that I've observed personally on several occasions is to ostracize such a devotee and thinking, oh, he's bad association now, do sangha, we have to be careful now, he'll bring us to his position of being fallen and so on. So that's generally the immediate reaction that I've observed, not only in myself but also in others also. So how might we deal with that situation with a more enlightened understanding is that, okay, devotee is struggling now. Perhaps he's struggling in his devotional service. And so maybe in conjunction with some higher guidance, I may see in what way I can help give support to that devotee so that instead of him becoming ostracized and then totally abandoned, perhaps that could be a scenario. Then in what ways can I help to give support so that the devotee can return? I told the story, I remember hearing this. One sannyasi, Srila Prabhupada's time, had left the sannyas ashram. I'm not going to say the name. But he was a very prominent personality in one particular country, and he ended up leaving the sannyas ashram. And the devotees broadcasted it all across ISKCON. And Srila Prabhupada was very furious. He said, now the devotee will never come back. What have you done? Now he will never come back. And Prabhupada was very upset. We've heard this story. This devotee actually did end up coming back. He was totally committed to Srila Prabhupada. And he joined the Grihastha Ashram and continued his services in Srila Prabhupada's movement. But Prabhupada was very furious. He said, now you made it in such a way that this devotee will never return. So I was appreciative of that story because Prabhupada was always thinking of ways to support his followers. Even if they made so many mistakes, we know about Hayagriva, so many mistakes, and Prabhupada never abandoned him. As such, he was always very accepting. In our own condition, we may not have the spirituality by which we can deal with every individual who may have a boo-boo, or that it may be beyond our ability to understand or give support. But in conjunction with higher guidance, we may, rather than immediately jump to crucifixion of the individual, we may rather find out in what ways we might be able to give support or render service in such a way that such a person can become immediately reinstated. I don't know if that. I couldn't think of it exactly. I mean, my probable story is there.
Comments on that example.
Okay.
One of them is the at least my recollection of the incident, because I was present when it happened. Prabhupada didn't say he'll never come back. He said it'll make it very difficult for him to continue. Mm-hmm. Because he hadn't left Krishna consciousness. He left his ashram. It'll be so embarrassing for him because you broadcast this. And so he wanted it to be dealt with in a confidential way so that he could carry on in his devotional service as a grahastha. And a few other things. One of them is publicly Prabhupada dealt a certain way, while privately he dealt in another way with the same person. This is little of the confidentiality issue. He would hammer on someone and publicly support the person. So he, you know, and expect that others would support the person. That was, he was showing by example how we should do. Well, he was taking a very strong position. Sometimes, not always. So that's an example. I'm just making, if one, like the position, trying to recall where it is in the Bhagavad Gita purport, where if you have a position of authority over someone, you may instruct that someone. If you don't have a position of authority over someone, you don't instruct that someone. So and then the position of authority is a lot dependent upon the person accepting the position of authority. And then you can exercise that authority, but not a sideline person exercising the position of authority when it's not your position to do so. The other individual has not accepted you as their authority. You don't do so. So that's an embellishment of something that, you know, we hear sometimes. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. Sometimes you have to say something strongly. And it may not seem nice, but you have to say it strongly because of that position. If someone that's in that position doesn't say something strongly, then it can just go, you know, spread. Now then, one other point is dusanga. It's one thing to be support for someone who is deviated. It's another thing to intimately associate with that person who's deviated. So, support, how can I be of support, may not be, or it may be, depending upon, you know, the circumstances, I can continue to associate with this person unrestrictedly because I see more deeply what their real position is. It's a temporary, you know, insanity or, you know, some state of mind that's not really the character of that individual. I can, you know, depending upon one's position of spiritual strength and the relationship with that person, one can continue to give association to that person without restriction. Recognizing this isn't their character, the other is their character. But there may be other situations, and my strength may not be, I can't do that, but let me be of support in some other way. So there's lots of variables in all of this. And one other thing is separating the behavior from the person, which is, you know, the external from the internal. I can appreciate certain person for what their real quality, similar, but what their real quality is, while at the same time, that behavior is bad behavior. And what prompted the bad behavior is a bad place. It's a contamination that prompted the bad behavior. But then, you know, a little bit like the Imoga situation, there's something other than that that's inside, and that's something to be honored. While at the same time, you know, the contamination and the behavior that came from the contamination is contamination, and address it to the person. This is a last point. Address it to the person and be careful about, be very wary of speaking about the person to other persons. Unless, you know, there's some service relationship, and otherwise, you know, it's something that's like informative, educational. I'd like to understand how to best address situations like this because although it's remote to me now, there may be situations that I'll have to deal with firsthand because there's somebody as a mentor I'm dealing with, and I'd like to understand it. Not, you know, vilify the person, not sadhu ninda or Vaishnav ninda, but I'd like to understand the situation, and therefore I can speak openly for the well-being of the person and the well-being of persons that may, there may be something similar. I'd like to have clarity on the dynamic that's happening here for the purpose of my service as a mentor. Not as, you know, let me get away from this contaminated person kind of mood. Okay, we're at 17 minutes before the hour. Any...
Thanks for the point, Prabhu. I was wondering, in the neophyte position, what are some ways that we can... Sure. I was wondering, in the neophyte position, how can we practice seeing everyone as sadhu? Because often, at least in my experience, the mind is very judgmental because it's outward facing. So how or what are some ways that we can practice this, you know, equal vision?
Basically, there's two points that I usually like to mention in this regard. The first point is humility is required. Just as we may be seeing so many faults in others, we're possessing of the same faults. So there's a necessity to be humble and understand that we are also deprived of pure Krishna consciousness. And therefore, I need to Dr. Heal Thyself type of understanding, there should be some humility there. And as far as practicing seeing, there's two ways of seeing things, basically. This is from the Ishopanishad. One is to see things according to the naked eye, and one way is to see things according to Shabda Brahman, means spiritual sound vibration, the vibrations that we're hearing daily. So instead of seeing things with the naked eye and coming to some conclusion, we should give more emphasis to the types of messages we've heard and then try to see things in light of those messages. It is not that seeing is not involved in spiritual life. Pratyaksha is also there in spiritual life, but it's based on what we've heard from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So that was kind of like my hit the pause button, I'm coming to a conclusion based on what I'm seeing with the naked eye. Rather than do that, hit the pause button, and what are some of the messages that I've heard? And then try to see the situation according to that message. Although I would like to tell, we should be less concerned about looking at so many other persons and trying to, you know, gauge our spiritual life in that way. But rather, we should be more concerned about ourselves getting situated. And that's usually the fault of devotees when we're in an immature state. We're always looking at others and then trying to assess according to that. So that should stop. And, well, aren't I need to know who to associate with. This is a general thing that I get when I tell this point. But we have to know, Nectar of Instruction says that we have to discriminate. Nectar of Instruction also says go and live at Radha Kund. You know, so which one do you apply? So those verses have different levels. One has to be at certain levels of attainment for a certain level of proper application. Like, no one can move to Radha Kund right now. At least it's not recommended. You can do that. But it's not recommended to move to Radha Kund right now. That's a very high level of attainment. What about discriminating amongst Vaishnavas? That is mentioned in text 5. That's not so high up, isn't it? But according to Acharyas, and Srila Prabhupada also makes a comment there, that verse, in order for its proper application, is meant for a Madhyam Adhikar. That means a more advanced... That means a Madhyam Adhikar has ability to discriminate without finding fault and thus committing aparadha. So then when we're on a more immature platform, we are feeling shelter in some devotees, for sure. That's why we're coming to the temple. So we can just spend more time in that type of shelter that we're confident about and less time looking at so many others and then coming to wrong conclusions and committing offenses. If I feel sheltered here, let me spend time and gain spiritual strength in that shelter until I become properly situated. This is like my general gist. I don't know, Marish, if that's okay.
Hare Krishna, Jajan Prabhu. Actually, I'd like to ask this question to you, Maharaj, because I've already asked it to Jajan Prabhu, and I didn't get a... So, so if we have the fortune of doing some trying to situate ourselves through practice, and then we feel, let's say, we're having a good day, and we feel some clarity internally, so just kind of, you know, like you've done a little bit of the sweeping for the day. And then you come in contact with a devotee, or you come in contact with someone on book distribution, something like this, and you feel your internal situation change. Like you feel like either it's aroused a contamination that you weren't aware of that you had, or that person's just contaminated you. It's an experience that I've been having that I understand I'm fallen and I'm probably the one that's dirty, but I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm wondering... Yeah, I'm not sure what to do, how to address that situation. Because it's like a stimulus. Like if you hit your foot, oh, I don't want to do that again. But when you're in contact with someone, you don't know, is this... You just don't know?
Okay, so... A little preamble is each situation is a little different. Each person is a little different. So it's hard to answer without, the particulars. But having said that, there's some general principles. And general principle is seeking purification. Seeking purification involves following things that are standard, standard practices, standard principles, and applying them. So I'm walking along the path of my devotional practice, and I'm feeling certain something internally, and then outside something triggers feeling different internally. Let me continue walking along the path of devotional service and let that process itself out over time. The main thing I need to be concerned about is, am I applying myself properly to the process of purification? Because over time, if I'm applying myself properly to the process of purification, guess what? Purification is going to happen. And this may be, like your example of stubbing the toe, this may be one of those things that I wasn't properly attentive to the process of purification, or, etc. I may have been fruitive. Instead of giving association and seeking my purification, I may have become fruitive. And Krishna's tapping me on the wrist saying, don't be fruitive. Or, there's some contamination in your heart. I'd like you to be aware of that contamination in your heart. Here's something so you can see that contamination in your heart. Oh, thank you, Krishna. And then you continue with the process of purification. Let me continue in the process of purification. So you can process it in a different way than, I want things to be monotonous or always have the same, pattern of what's going on internally. There will be a different pattern of what's going on internally when I'm studying when we're having this discussion, and then when I'm in the battlefield. But what's important is I'm doing what I'm doing, the studying Srimad Bhagavatam and having these nice discussions and being on the battlefield is the satisfaction of Krishna, because that's the goal. Let me orient my heart towards that goal. And as Krishna orchestrates, you know, what happens as I'm going along the path of devotional service, that's up to him. He'll give me different situations and circumstances. Main thing is, am I applying myself properly to the means of purification and the means of pleasing Krishna? And then I'll gradually see where the dirty things are inside my heart and become more fixed in my determination to simply please Krishna. And then those impure things in my heart, and also I can be an instrument to help the situation out there that's, you know, they don't have a clue about. That's a service, is to give a clue by example. And at the same time, I'm getting purified. So I continue on the path of purification. So for the fourth time, the main thing is, am I applying myself properly to the process of purification, devotional service? Is Krishna being pleased the real goal? And am I applying the means of pleasing Krishna properly? And then variegatedness and toe-stubbing, it's fine. Because those two things are there. The means of purification is being applied properly, and Krishna is smiling. Little stubbing of my toe, that's quite okay. Because the other things will, you know, I'm getting there to the goal. It's almost 9 o'clock. We're going to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Those that didn't speak, be prepared. Our group that's here, mentors, please be prepared tomorrow. Speak a little more briefly, but the discussion part is also very nice.